back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. It's second half, about 15 minutes into the second half, and we'll spend those 15 with James Scully for a little bit of handicapping magic. James continues to provide bankroll boosting suggestions with his handicapping stylings and the LSFP, the last second Friday push. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I was going to say something clever about the Breeders' Cup coming up and 2 weeks out and doing a lot of studying, handicapping work right now. Excited to see the pre-entries come out this week.
No, it's going to be what we all anticipate, and talked earlier with Shap about the Brisnet advertising, advertised the handicapping package, the ultimate handicapping package, a ton of information, and we'll have everybody. We'll have Kelly, we'll have Vance, and everything you need.
I think the big domestic stars are easy, to identify. I think Cave Rock on Friday, and then on Saturday, Flightline, Nest, Jackie's Warrior, Golden Pal, horses like that. But I've started looking at the turf and the Philly AmeriTurf and the turf and the mile, and just some compelling matchups. I mean, there's not one standout from Europe coming over. I mean, just looking at this you know, Kinross and Modern Games. I haven't gotten an update today. Bay Bridge and Adyar are both possible for the turf, is the way I'm understanding it. And, you know, looking at these Phillies like Dream Loper and Saffron Beach for the Philly Amer turf, just going to be some compelling matchups.
No doubt. And as the word comes on decisions, and particularly the Euros, they're much more, I don't want to say loose-lipped, but we always seem to get more on the Monday and Tuesday before the release of the pre-entered fields. For whatever reason, the Euros are much more they're much more open about saying who they entered. And domestically, things are a little closer to the vest for whatever reason. So there's really a lot to keep track of. But this is the weekend. And there's plenty, you know, of good racing, obviously, with Keeneland and Maryland Million, and tonight at Remington, et cetera, in New York. But this is time well spent, actually, even before the pre-entries are out, to go back and look at, particularly not the favorites. I mean, you know what to expect from the obvious horses, but go back and watch some replays and some horses that finished second and third, and figure out. You know, we talked about verifying a heroic effort at Keeneland in the Futurity behind Forte. That kind of an effort, a lot of times, then projects to a terrific next outs as well. I mean, famously, Oxbow, famous out of the Derby into Preakness, have the same kind of, attending a strong pace and being able to finish and not collapsing generally bodes well. So
he was the only horse that was in the top eight that in the early stages that was in the top eight at the wire, Oxbow, in that year's Derby.
There you go. There you go. All right, James, let's dive in. Where are we heading?
We're going to take a look at just some Keeneland races. I got a couple of price plays. Of course, I think are eligible to run well. That I think at least based on the morning line, look like might offer a little value. I'm going to start with that race four tomorrow. It's a $140,000 allowance, and obviously at a mile and a 16th on turf, and you have a 2-1 morning line favorite in here in Park Avenue, who's been showing speed, but it's been stopping. Now, granted, she's running against some really good fields in her last couple, Going Global and others. But I think this Curly Roof, Steve, can keep her honest and, at least put some pressure on Park Avenue, but, at least by the far turn. I like number three, Flippant, returning to allowance company for Vicki Oliver. And I've just been, I was like a little bit of a fan of this mare last year, which she rolled through some, a couple of lesser stakes wins, the Dueling Grounds Oaks and the Virginia Oaks. Came to Keeneland, wasn't ready for that Grade One race. But I look at how she came back this year. She came back in a tough listed stake at Monmouth Park. Whimsical Muse won that race, upset him. But that Vigilante's Way, a graded winner, a stakes winner, this summer, was second, and Flippin' ran third. Came right back, ran a good race, the Dead Heat with Indy Woods, in the Indiana Distaff. Vicki Oliver, once again, ships her to Del Mar to run against, top company, and she runs six in the Yellow Ribbon, so, not very really good effort. Park Avenue was seventh in there, but last time out, just ran her too long. Mile and 5/16. Finally gets her back in allowance company at the mile and a 16 distance that fits. Two of her four wins have come at the mile and a 16 trip, and I think she'll run back to, her effort at Monmouth and Indiana Grand, turn in a real, I think, big effort. I like number three, Flippin' in race four.
6-1 for Vicki Oliver, who's always a consideration at Keeneland.
Yeah. And then I'll mention, real quick, in race number six, I'm going to try to beat Gunite in there. And I give Gunite a lot of credit, but, this is a horse to me, Gunite, he just loves Saratoga. I'm not surprised at seeing him run those races. He won that Hopeful by, almost six lengths last year. He's got two graded, two graded wins and 2 seconds in graded races there. And the other track that he really relishes is Churchill. You know, he's won a pair of stakes and has three of his five wins at Churchill. So all of his wins have come at Saratoga and Churchill. This will be his first start at Keeneland, and I'm really keen on Artorias there. I think he's a horse I'm going to be looking to key in all in multi-race wagers on Saturday. You know, one thing about these Arrogates is, you know, I think you know, it's real shame that, you know, he passed away after only a few crops, but being a Breeders' Cup Classic winner and being a Travers winner, there's a desire to like say, hey, these his offspring are going to be these long distance horses. But, you know, we're looking at Cave Rock. It's just so much speed there with this son of Arrogate. And I look at this Artorias. You look at his dam, Paula Silver Lining. She's a multiple grade one winning millionaire sprinter who could never go two turns. She's a sister to Dad's Caps, who's a multiple grade one winning sprinter who could never go two turns. And you look through this family, and it's all speed. I think the cutback to seven is going to be perfect for Artorias. He has a real sharp work in preparation with Jack Christopher, and I like him for Chad Brown in the Perryville.
Very good.
And in race number nine, that's a race at 7 furlongs, 3-0 fillies at Raven Run. I just think, you know, Smash Ticket, she's a little vulnerable going seven. She's never been seven. I think the Union Lake and Finnegal's Cave are going to show speed. Wicked Halo, you know, I looked at her speed ratings in those races before that Prioris, and even in that Prioris, that Sterling Silver that she beat was no factor in other five stakes versus open rivals. So I think she's a little bit flattered. Her races look a little better on paper than they perhaps are. I like number nine, Midnight Stroll, Steve, to run these horses down. And this Not This Time filly for John Terranova gets a jockey switch to Luis Saez. You know, her last two starts at 7 furlongs, she won a stake at Tampa and ran third to Society in the Pennsylvania, in the Charlestown Oaks, and Society came back and won the Cotillion impressively. He's going to the Distaff. And that Delaware Oaks two back, that was a really strong race. That Morning Matcha that Midnight Stroll beat came right back and won her next start by 10 lengths, and then she ran second to Society in the Cotillion. So that was a filly that was moving forward, that was in good form, and Midnight Stroll handled her that day, and I think she's got more to offer for John Terranova in the Raven Run.
Well, the backers of Midnight Stroll, they're piling up. Okay.
I wasn't listening earlier, so I missed that. Right. So,
there's
one other horse I did want to mention at huge odds. I'm sorry, I blew right by. Oh yeah, race number seven. This number nine, Touch of Class, might be a little overmatched in this spot from a class perspective, but I love the fact that this four-year-old filly has shown improved speed in her last two starts. She draws outside in post nine. If she breaks running with James Graham, she's got a chance to stick around a lot longer than her morning line odds indicate. And I'm going to have some money, a few bucks on her nose. Touch of Class, I like her a little bit in race five and a half for a long turf sprint, race number seven.
Very good. The nine, Touch of Class, 15-1, and Jimmy Graham for Bernie Flint. All right, there's four ideas.
Yeah, four ideas. Three of them, you know, I'm hoping to get a good price on. And then I got one more play for you today, this last second Friday play. That's going to come at Aqueduct. Race number eight is it's a allowance, entry-level allowance, $105,000. You know, you have in this race, Steve, you got number three, Orchestration, number seven, the Gray Wizard. They're both non-winning types that are going to take lots of money in here, and perhaps they could get the job done, but I'm not keen on either one of them. Number 10, Good Medicine. I thought, here we go, this once again, this improved speed angle that I loved. I loved how Pratt put this colt right on the lead last time. I thought he looked sharp leading wire to wire. I don't think there's any pace in this race. He's going right to the front with Jose Gomez, and this Todd Pletcher trained mastery colt could continue to move forward off of that race leading wire to wire in race 8 today. So that's my last second Friday play, number 10 in race 8 at Aqueduct today.
That's an interesting push, James, because the fact that Fletcher uses Gomez here is intriguing, and they've had success together. In fact, so far at this meet, they're 2-for-2, and overall 3-for-8. So the kid is giving he's getting 9, 7, and 5 pounds from everybody.
Yeah. And you know he's got to be hustling this horse to the front. He's the best at getting these speed horses to the front. I like Jose Gomez.
Look at that. Well done, James. 10-1, the 10 horse in the 8th race today. The LSFP, the last second Friday push. James, I got you off a minute early. 10:59.
Thank you, sir. Hey, have a great weekend, Steve. Look forward to talking more about the Breeders' Cup next week.
You bet. James Scully, everybody, and we will have pre-entered fields to talk about with James and everybody else. Coming up here, hour 3, and no break, but hour 3, Hammer is going to join us here momentarily, and we're going to probably pause here and talk with, very, very sadly, I told you at the beginning of the show that word had come from the West Coast yesterday after late afternoon or early evening. I didn't know about it till this morning, that Howie Zucker had passed away. And I really, as nice a man as and as good a horse trainer as you're going to find. Hammer, good morning.
Hello. There you go. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. I was telling everybody that I mentioned, of course, at the beginning of the show about Howie's passing and, you know, all your years in that racing office. How about some tribute for Howie Zucker?
Why, sure. Are we live now?
Yeah.
I didn't get... Okay. Sorry about that. I'll just start off with a little levity here. I had to laugh a little bit this morning as at 3:15 this morning, got one of the most ambiguous questions in text short history. Are you up? And of course it was 3:15 here, but you didn't know. And so when you get a question like that at 3:15, you're probably not up. But if you answer that you're not up, of course you're lying. And if you did say you're up, you're probably in for a conversation on texting that you didn't want. But it's pretty fun. I just have to laugh. But I can never hold it against anybody because nobody ever knows where I am.
Hey, exactly.
It was pretty funny. Are you up? It's like, oh, boy. And you can never go back to sleep after that anyway. But that's I always get a chuckle at that, and I've done it myself. But the classic, are you up in the middle of the night, was a good good opening. But you know, the question that you asked me, obviously, of you, did you hear about Howie and Howie Zucker? And yes, I did. I'd heard about it yesterday. I got the call and just kind of went back and thought about it. But Howie Zucker and his wife Lorraine as well. But Howie is a longtime friend, going back into the Bob Umfrey days for me. And so I first met him at Golden Gate Fields when I was working up there in the late 80s for a bit. And Bobby was the racing secretary. And then went back east for a while at Monmouth, where Howie trained for years in the early 70s. And I think that's where Bobby met him. But then when I came back to Santa Anita, Howie was, you know, one of the few people that I knew at all. And he took me under his wing and showed me around, gave me some of the inside dope on what was going on at Santa Anita with the racetrack and the people. And I was always just so kind with showing around, showing people, showing me around, introducing me. And you know, just such a giving guy. He was just so into the racing and the racetrack life and actually the racetrack itself. You know, he took me and Gina as well out to a lot of early dinners, with people. And I can remember, you know, sitting with him and he trained at that time for the Grethers. Who had a lot of horses through the years, Arno and Carl. I still am friends with, and actually Arno's the one who called me. And we would go out and have a great time, and we had a lot of dinners together. He just loved to go out, loved to have fun, loved to tell stories, and he was just such a, you know, we'd always stop by the office and say hi, and we always go by the barn and say hi to him, and he was just a friendly guy. I don't know that many people who can say a bad word about him. But, you know, through the years, just, you know, that friendship just grew. Phil Combest was one of the crew from the early days, especially in the Florida days with Bobby and Howie. And I just got off the phone with Phil, and he was telling stories. And, you know, Bobby Humphrey, he used to call him Dr. Who. Howie, he'd call him Dr. Who. And I just let it go by, and I never really questioned it. I never really watched that TV show, but I didn't understand it. So I this morning when I talked to Phil, I got off the phone and I texted him. I said, you know, you got to answer me one question. Why did Bobby call him Dr. Who? Well, I guess back in the day, at Monmouth in the 70s, they were training some horses out there, and they were actually camping across the street on Wolf Hill, which you could do those days, and train. And I guess they got this old TV somewhere, and if they went to the top of Wolf Hill and they tuned it in, they could get like a Philly station, and the only show they could watch was Doctor Who. And so for you, that's where the name came from, Doctor Who. And I was funny. I'm laughing now because I heard the name forever and I never knew why. And I can just see that. I can see Howie going, we got TV, we got TV. And they all run up the hill and there's this goofy show, Doctor Who. If any of you have ever seen it, which I think I've seen a half of an episode, but, you know, just, you know, I think I got it all out this morning, so I'm going to be able to hold it together pretty good. I Gene and I told you last week we were in New Jersey and we spent the week at Casey Kelly's house of Bobby Humphrey's sister. And ironically, Wednesday morning before we flew back a couple of days ago, we spent 15, 20 minutes talking about Howie and, you know, how things were and some of the old times and you know, how things are. And so he's just a good guy, just a good racetrack, involved in a lot of stuff at the racetrack, a lot of charities. You know, anytime a new person came to the racetrack, a group, a school kids, whoever it may be, he would always volunteer, bring him by my barn, bring him by my barn. Let me show him around. Let me introduce him to the track, you know, put the kids on one of his ponies type of thing. Just that kind of guy. Love Del Mar. Always, you know, Del Mar's one of those places, it's like Saratoga, where you go down and you get a new place every year. And, you know, we always knew where Howie was and would always have us over for a, you know, a Del Mar dinner. And I was very cool that he won his last race at Del Mar this last past meet. I just looked it up a little bit ago, and he won his first race at Keystone, which was then Fildy Park and now Parks in the 70s. And, you know, another story. He was very into the racetrack, and sometimes he was too into it, and he could get you in a corner and you know, talk about sand and you know, how big the cushion should be for a while, and he would go on and on, kind of like Bruce Headley used to. But, you know, I remember one day years and years ago, he goes, you know, I got this guy. He's from Maine, and I think we should have him in, and blah, 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 blah. And it turned out to be this big kid.
Yeah,
turned out to be Nick Peterson.
Yep,
and he brought her. He was the guy who brought him around or named him first, and they got him to come out and do this measurement that he did. You know, this was years and years ago.
Yep,
and so he came out and worked on Santa Anita for a while, and you know, during our during our problems with synthetic, as we did that too, was out here. So yeah, he brought Mick Peterson around, and like I said, he and his wife Lorraine just always fun to be around, and always happy to open up another new bottle of wine and tell some stories. So I wanted to just talk about the best horse that he trained, and a horse called Crafty CT. And he came around, he was around right when I got here. I got here in 2000, so Crafty CT came around, I think he was running in Gary Young was involved with that group, in and out too. And, so Crafty CT broke his maiden at Santa Anita in a very fast time. I think went in 15 and changed for 6.5 furlongs. And then he went on and won the, San Rafael, which was one of the early preps for the Santa Anita Derby. And then was unfortunate to come along the same year as a horse called Point Given, who, of course, went on to win 2/3 of the Triple Crown. But Crafty C ended up running against Point Given in the Santa Anita Derby and did run second to him. At mile and eighth wasn't his bag, that's for sure. But he only got beat, he ran second, I think he got beat 4 or 5 lengths. And went on to become a really good sprinter. I think he ended up going in the Cigar Mile and finishing in the money, and Congaree won that one. I just remember that, and went on to win close to $1 million back when $1 million was a good benchmark. But that was one of his better horses. But Howie always had a horse or two in the barn that could run a little bit. Got hooked up with Mr. Harrison, had some cowbreds, and it's one of those guys that was always back there you could depend on, and ran his horses when they were ready, and just a good old guy. And I saw some of the comments on Twitter, and most of them reflect that. And like I said, just on a personal note, he's definitely missed. And I don't know what the arrangements will be. I know we'll make a call over there this afternoon. But Howie Zucker, great guy, and lived a great life. So.
I appreciate it, Hammer. And you mentioned Crafty CT. It kind of came before I started doing this. But when I started going to California, he always was incredibly nice to me. And as those nice horses started to come along, the Queen of the Catsel.
Queen of the
Catsel, she sticks out to me. I remember talking, and he had a very nice, mare, well moneyed, who he carefully handled, and remember talking about her as well. And I'm sure we discussed Crafty CT, Madame Pietra was a real nice horse that he had that basically spent the whole career finishing first and second. If a horse had talent, he could extract it. This is one of these real old school type trainers who never had more than a handful of horses, 2,200 starts, 246 wins, basically over 25, 30 years. That is really, really a bygone approach. I don't think he ever had 100 starters in a year.
No, you know what? I think you're right. And he took the long way, which sometimes, I give away a little secret here. Through the years, when we were doing the stalls here at Santa Anita, we would, the toughest job that we do or a racing sick hair has to do is give away stalls. And I would tell my stall guy, who we had, Don Luby was there for a while, and then Bobby Troger. I said, you get one wild card and I get one wild card. Meaning when we would go over it, you tell me if you want to, no questions asked, and I get my guy, no questions asked. And my guy was always Howie. So how he got whatever, you know, he had between 10 and 16 and whatever. It was never a deal of if he needed, like, how many you want? 16, you got it. Next question, we move on to the next guy. Hmm. So he was always my wild card. That's kind of funny. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure other second racing characters do their own thing, but I gave everybody, like I said, me and Bobby, or Don, we each got a wild card, no questions asked, we'll take care of it. And it was usually a smaller trainer, obviously, that we wanted to take care of. And I knew how he styled. He'd take the slow road to get him back. But if they were fit and ready to go, he'd run them. And you know, if they weren't gonna be around for or take more than 6 months or so, he would ship them out and bring them back in away. So yeah. But had a lot of, always had a story to tell, and like I said, he would get you talking about that race chair. Knew you were in for a good 10-15 minute conversation, but it was pretty good. Just like I said, you bring his name up, and you usually a smile comes to your face because one of those stories leaps out. So anyway, I don't know what they're going to do here or there, but we'll definitely find that out for sure.
Well, I can imagine, Rick, that for those that want to pay tribute to Howie, he was an executive board member at Karma, the outstanding California retirement organization, and a gift to Karma in Howie's name will be an appropriate and appreciated and thoughtful.
Right, and I did see this and work with the Gregson Foundation as well.
Sure.
So we'll come up. I'll call over to the. I'll talk to Lorraine and then we'll talk to the track and see what they've got cooked up and give some things out that people can pay tribute to. So we'll get that out too. And speaking of switch gears here a little bit, but speaking of pay tribute, yeah, they're going to have a race. Like, is it tomorrow or Sunday
tomorrow
for Jay?
Tomorrow.
It's tomorrow.
The fourth race.
Okay, well, we might have to switch plans and maybe go out and...
Oh, that's nice.
And check there now. I just read it yesterday, so I wasn't real sure. So that's pretty good. I mean, that's a great thing for Jay. And let the local folk, enjoy one last official visit to the track. I'm sure he'll be sneaking in the back door a few times after that, but not as much. I know he's wanted to take a little break, but this will get him back there. So like I said, I heard you talking about it this morning, I think with Scott, and so tomorrow, well, we can always go left and get that done, so we'll check that out. And I'm glad to hear about that. What else did I have knocked down here? Yeah, we had a great New Jersey visit going back, and Monmouth Park was still open, and was able to go back, get a few guys back there, and talk to Kelly Breen, and a long friend, a brother, and I still, every time I go back there, I love the clock and crew there, is known. And I still, to this day, I don't know how they do it, that they clocked the horses from, a little bit before the half mile pole on the backside, and have done it forever. And the horses go by and tell them what they're doing, and watches are clicking, and they're, you get the one to get the bay with the da da da, the lingo. And you know what? They come back and ask their time. No one ever, I've never heard anyone go, they go minute two, and I've never heard an argument. I mean, so I spent some time up there with them, which is good. And Monmouth Park is, one of the oldies. And great. And by one, we took a drive down the coast and went to one of your spots, Brielle. But you can't come home from a 6 day New Jersey run without talking about food. And I think Gene and I put on, a couple LBs, you just can't, everything, when the weather gets, or starts to get a little chill, and the little frost on the pumpkin, food becomes the centerpiece. So we had a couple of old spots and a couple of new ones, and just a good run out there. We have probably, we're almost into November, probably maybe during our Breeders' Cup run, we'll announce calendar giveaway and what we're going to have, what we're going to ask from people this year. I'm zeroing in on a couple of things. As you know, we ask people to take a photo of something, and I think I got a few things this year we'll do. So this year, the good people at the Kentucky Downs are going to jump in and make the calendar giveaway possible, so we can continue that. And so we're looking forward to that. So we do the draw, right, is on Monday, the first Breeders' Cup draw.
The
pre-entries, which means maybe spend Monday in order to enter next Monday to get in. So everybody that wants to run or is even thinking about running puts their horse in, and then the entries are checked out, and any races that are overfilled will be looked at the next day by the Breeders' Cup Selection Committee, and the horses are chosen, and we'll explain that maybe next week. But basically, half the field is determined by points, and points are earned by races that horses run in during the year. Graded races, they get X amount of points. So the top 7 point getters and winning your in guys are automatically in, and then the other 7 are selected by the committee on the horse's record and how and things like that. So that'll happen, and then I forget where they announce the horses on Tuesday night or Wednesday, but Wednesday. At least by Wednesday we'll have the lineup of who's all getting in, and then they'll draw the horses on the next Monday. But what I like is early on, I kind of go through a quick, and if we have a few minutes, I do a quick run through the races, pick out the favorites, and just decide quickly right now whether I'm going to bother trying to beat them, or I'm just going to kind of figure that race is over and I'm going to move on to the second race. So I went through that last night, and we'll see what you come up with. But just going to quickly, the order that I came through, and it might be wrong with the favorite. It doesn't matter. It's early, but basically it's kind of the race and the horse to see where I'm going to look to, maybe look for a price or two. So the first race I looked at was the Classic and Frontline. And I'm going to say, no, I'm not betting. I'm not going to waste time right now looking to beat him. I'm going to let that race go and see you later. The Dirt Mile, I got Jack Christopher does being the favorite. And like I said, I might be wrong in the favorite, but I'm going to say yes and try and beat him. And I don't know who with it just have. I'm not particularly 100% sold on the going to 2 Turn Mile. So I'm going to try and beat Jack Christopher. And jump in here if you have anything here on the distaff. I mean, I'm going to use Nest/Malifat as the favorites. And I don't know if I want to spend any time trying to beat them at this point. One or either of them. We don't quite know who the European contingent might be, as we got a surprise last year. But right now I'm going to let that be. Speaking of that, I saw a little blurb where Latruska may think about going in the Filly and Mare Sprint, which would add some luster to that race. I guess her 2 turn days may be over, but I thought that might be a good call for her. And speaking of that race, I don't know who's going to be the favorite there. Goodnight Olive is maybe being the favorite. And yes, I think that she would be. I would try and beat her. I don't think that she would be a cinch. Sessie is in there. And of course, if the Trusa dips down, she might be something to look at. But I would try. There's a favorite I would try and beat. The Filly and Mare Turf, not quite sure who's coming from Europe. There's a horse called Nashua that I think is committed, and she looks super, super tough. But that race has produced some decent prices over the years with some of the Europeans. So, she looks very, very good, and I might end up selecting her. But I'll look a little deeper in that race as well, for sure. Juvenile Fillies, that to me is a grab bag. And Wonder Wheel, I think, would be the tepid favorite as we speak. But yes, I'm going to try and beat her. I don't think that she's a cinch by any sense of the imagination. I mean, she could win for sure, but I'm looking for a price in there. Now the Juvenile Colts on the other hand with Cave Rock, right now, I don't think I'm going to waste time. I've seen this story too many times. to try. He's just looked great, and as of right now, I'll let that race go. The juvenile Phillies turf is a horse called Blue Rose Sen that looks very, very tough. I mean, I may let that race go as well until I see what else is on there, but right now she looks super tough to me. The juvenile turf, I don't know, there's a horse called Silver Knot that looked like was going to be the favorite. I kind of went to odds checker to look up some of these. And, but that race once again looks too wide open to zero in. So we'll spend some time there. The juvenile turf sprint, horse called Blackbeard, looks very, very tough in there. Not sure where to go, but I'm not sure on that one. That horse looks very tough, Blackbeard. The mile, once again, not sure who's going to be favored there. A couple Europeans, a horse called Kinross, who is on, I think, a 4-5-6 race win streak, but going short, be the first time around two turns. And then, of course, the name that everyone really doesn't want to hear, I don't think, is Modern Games. It's those of us who lived through last year and were involved and coulda, woulda, shoulda, Modern Games is back. And boy, after that race in Canada, a couple back, looks very, very tough. But I'm thinking the mile's up for grabs. I'm going to go deep there, and I mean deeper to look for sure. The sprint, Jackie's Warrior. It's going to be a favorite, and I don't know. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to try and maybe look a little deeper there. So earlier in the year, looked invincible, but remember what happened last year, and I'm going to say yes on Jackie's Warrior. So we might shift back later, but right now we'll take a look at a couple others. The turf, Bay Bridge is in there, and boy, I tell you what, he looks tough. So right now I'm going to not spend a lot of time looking to beat him. And in the turf sprint, Golden Pal looks tough to me. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to beat him right now. So that's just kind of one of the ways that I whittle down where I'm going to spend my time, in the next 10 days, getting to the Friday, Saturday. But that's who I look at as the favorites and who I think has a really good chance to win, and who doesn't.
Cool. Well, good rundown. All right, Hammer. We'll do our usual lead up, and you and Jimmy, we count on you and Jimmy for a couple of winners.
Oh yeah.
And you'll be contributing to the betting companion, the At the Races Breeders' Cup betting companion,
yep.
Brought to you by AmWager and Form to Win. So that'll be back for its third great year. So we got plenty to build up to and look forward to.
Yeah, that's great. And like you, Callie on earlier mentioned the Maryland Million. If you live in the area there, I went 4 or 5 years ago. Great show. It's that's cool fall weather type of day at the racetrack, and they put on a wonderful show with the good races. I haven't looked yet, but if I was in the area, I'd head to Laurel for sure. So do that, enjoy it, get ready for the Breeders' Cup, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.
Rick Hammerly, everybody, away they go on your Twitter, and appreciate particularly the tribute to Howie Zucker. As I said at the beginning of the show, the term Ubermensch, absolutely perfect for Howie and the kind of
yes.
The kind of person he was. Thanks, Hammer.
Yep, you got it, Steve.
Rick Hammerly, everybody, and I'm sure we'll get next week. We'll get a couple other voices to pay tribute to Howie. It's always it's always a little tough on like a Friday like this. Going to be joined by Nick Tamaro next, and we'll close out the morning and the week with Eric Hamelbeck. Talk about Claiming Crown, which those of you that have got horses that are eligible, that have run in races that make them eligible, you got till tomorrow to pre-enter to get put your hat in the ring. One of the advantages this year of Claiming Crown, it's been boosted out of Florida. Very difficult from other parts of the country to get to Florida for Claiming Crown. So being at Churchill is a real positive, as I've explained. Well, Cincinnati is can be reached from 70% of the country in 24 hours, trucking. So Louisville, a very similar scenario. So people that have ever wanted to run and claim your crown, this might be your best chance. So Eric will discuss that, and I'll also get Eric's reaction from a national HBPA perspective on the budget considerations that HISA floated this week. Talked to a couple of HBPA types this last couple of days, and this thing is very problematic. Nick Tamaro standing by. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I see where you really have embraced the carpet bombing approach to being the morning line maker at Keeneland. Now we've turned our attention toward Breeders' Cup and trying to create as much angst and chaos as possible here 3 weeks out.
I'm very proud of myself for that tweet this morning. I think that was some of my better work. I will admit. I think the reply with a GIF is obviously a lot more fun because it's definitely gotten some good ones, and I'm glad to see everybody kind of embracing it. I mean, and honestly, it was part of the conversation. I was on a podcast the other night, and I knew I was going to be asked about the Classic, so I kind of just made a list. There's an 8-horse list right now, so I think it's pretty well known who's likely to run, and so I was putting the odds together, and I thought to myself, well, damn, you know, I don't really see how I can make life as good shorter than Epicenter, definitely. Yeah, I really don't see how I can make him shorter than Teva. And I thought, is he really going to be the fourth choice? And I, you know, looking at the PPs in my mind, I thought to myself, how the hell is he going to win? So, you know, I figured might as well throw it out there. And I saw Mike Welsh's tweet that, you know, he worked fine, but he might not be quite as sharp as he was back in the summer. And I thought, all right, I got to have fun with everybody on this Friday morning. So let's see. Let's see what everybody says. And so it's definitely made for some fun replies.
Well, the question was framed, for those of you not on Twitter, Nick was asking, how angry are you going to be when I make Life is Good, the 8-to-1 fourth choice in the Classic, reply with a GIF? And so I went for that famed Firestarter meme, which is one of my favorites. I haven't seen it in a while, so I thought I'd pull that out. The little girl looking back at the camera with the house on fire. So that was my reply.
That one was great. That was no doubt about it. And I'm never gonna have anything but love for a Stephen King reference of any type. That was it was very strong and much appreciated.
Well, this will only, it's only going to get crazier and more volatile by the time the morning line will be out. And are you going to be, when they do the draw, are you going to have the morning lines at the same time?
Yes.
Or do they give you an overnight?
Yeah, I'm gonna have them done at draw time, and then I will do the non-Breeders' Cup races just as soon as they're drawn by the Keeneland Racing Office, so that the final can go out on Monday night, and the PPs for DRF and everybody else, Brisnet, will be available with odds at some point on Halloween night. So those of you that are going to finish up your trick-or-treating early so that you can then get to the handicapping. Of course, the pre-entries are going to come out on Wednesday. So, I mean, I will have, you know, I'll have 95% of the work done, really 99% of the work done before the draw, and then, you know, I'm going to make notes to myself, obviously, about adjustments that could be made on last-second horses that flip-flop races and or post-position situations. But, you know, the good thing about the configuration at Keeneland is that we shouldn't be dealing with any kind of extreme post-position scenarios, you know, other than maybe like a, I don't know, just thinking off the top of my head, the Laurel River drawing the 12 and the Dirt Mile, I suppose, could be a little problematic. Flight Line drawing the 1 and Life is Good the 2. I'm really not going to adjust the prices for something like that. But, yeah, to answer your question, I'll be able to make those those last second adjustments so that the odds, my understanding is that the odds are going to be read by the draw hosts, Brittany Erden and Rishi Prasad, at the draw on the 31st.
Very good. Perfect. All right, so everybody's up to speed. Nick, let's turn our attention to some racing action. And how much actual, you're making the line for Keeneland. Are you as frustrated as the rest of us in terms of some of the manic results?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday was awfully tough to envision. Those results were a little off the wall by any standards. I was a little, you know, I was a little disappointed in that eighth race yesterday because it was such a good race on paper. And I think the total no-show performances from I mean, St. Tappet wasn't a total no-show, but he was obviously not very good. That was really disappointing because I wanted to see him and Creative Minister at their best, kind of squaring off, and so that was, you know, that was pretty underwhelming, and it led to another upset, Trademark with Vicky Oliver. The race before that, I wouldn't have ever been able to bet that Joe Sharp horse in a million years, so, you know, understandably 54-1. I didn't expect anybody to give me any credit for making the horse 30 and going off 54-1. But horse was dropping in class, though, for what it's worth. But and was coming out of what now has become a pretty live race, that Dueling Grounds Oaks.
Exactly, and as I said earlier with Marty, if you see a dreadful performance, an isolated dreadful performance at Kentucky Downs, put a line through it, and don't let that cloud your judgment about a horse's potential. Because there's plenty of them that are going to come down that hill and be scared to death and simply not run and be tentative. And maybe they'll put in a little rally once they get to the bottom of the hill and things flatten out. But don't let the Kentucky Downs, you know, bad effort put you off a horse.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think the other half of it is that don't necessarily upgrade horses with good recent Kentucky Downs races. And I think that this race is actually a great example of it. And unsurprisingly, you and I are really good at handicapping races after their run. But, I mean, all kidding aside, you know, Justify My Love and Champagne Lady had both run really well at Kentucky Downs. And prior to that, they had not been, I mean, Justify My Love was coming in from Argentina, so you didn't really know what we were going to get from her. And, you know, in that race in particular, I made Bipartisanship the favorite on the outside. She went off the favorite, but, you know, Luis Saez, who's obviously one of the more talented jockeys in the country, put him on an off-the-pace horse going long on the turf, especially with a wide draw. He's not separating himself from just about anybody in any colony. So that was kind of a recipe for disaster as far as how well that horse was going to run as the favorite. And yeah, I mean, at that point, you had a lot of horses you could throw a blanket over. But Dueling Grounds Oaks, worth noting, Skims came back and won the race last week, which, well, I can't remember the name of the stance point. Vergara ran second. California Angel came back and basically lost a photo for second in the QE2. So that is coming back. And now Fancy Martini came back and won at 54-1. So that is coming back a very, very strong race. Worth noting anybody who was coming out of it anytime soon.
There you go. All right. Well, anything in Keeneland, or are we talking strictly New York?
No, I'll tell you, the tomorrow's stakes races are very interesting. I mean, I made Gunite a pretty solid favorite in the Perryville, and I kind of was expecting him to run in the Breeders' Cup. Wasn't sure what race Steve Asmussen would want to go to, obviously, with having Jackie's Warrior, and wondered if he might stretch him out for the Dirt Mile, but this Perryville gives him an opportunity to try, you know, lesser competition, obviously, with some goals next year. Artorias is cutting back off the Travers. This horse might be a very interesting cutback also, because he's obviously capable of winning at 9 furlongs as he did in the Curlin, but you're talking about an Arrogate Sun out of Paula Silver Lining, so the dam side is obviously a little, that's the dam side that includes Dad's Caps and a bunch of horses that were more sprint-oriented, so I'm really excited to see the matchup between those two. You've got Pinehurst coming back off a layoff now in Brendan Walsh's care, and Brendan just can't seem to buy a win at this point, but I think that horse will be pretty interesting to see off the bench. And the Raven Run, it's really all about how well Smash Ticket runs, because if Smash Ticket shows up with the kind of effort that she has in her last few starts, then she's going to be pretty tough to handle. She's been very, very good in her last two, and I'm interested to see how the New York bred Singles Cave stacks up against tougher competition as well. So, no, it's a very good card. I didn't make any firm handicapping opinions yet. I usually try and do that in two different waves, the latter of which is closer to the actual race day, because I think if I find myself really handicapping the races. When I'm making the morning line, I make more mistakes than normal.
Well, that Raven run, I forgot to bring one thing up with Dave Grenig earlier. Union Lake from Terra Nova, smash ticket, Atrus. Fingal's Cave, as mentioned, David Donk. Well, I guess Colorful Mischief has shifted to Churchill. Freedom Speaks, Jeremiah, is actually already at Keeneland, but was New York-based. I mean, this was crazy. I mean, a preponderance, and then Terra Nova again with Midnight Stroll, who is, she's going to end up like, what, 6-1, you think? The way everybody's...
I believe that's where I had her. I think it... in fact, let me tell you right now, I had Midnight Stroll.
Well, no, you have her at 10.
I actually had her at 10.
10-1.
Yeah.
But she's going to get bet.
She's an interesting... Yeah, she's an interesting bet because she was pace compromised in Charlestown Oaks last time out.
Well, and I again, there's another last race venue that you just don't let it influence your judgment too much. I mean, a horse coming off of a bull ring effort and is basically dirtied up, that's one of the benefits here. And so she's turning back technically as well, because the 2 turn 7/8 is different than the 1 turn 7/8. And you go back to that effort at Tampa when she ran 7 last, and 7 going 1 turn. And that's a pretty attractive effort. So I think that's one of the reasons everybody's kind of piling onto her. I thought Colorful Mischief at a bulbous price was attractive.
What did I make her, 12? Yeah, I should have flipped off Union Lake and Midnight Stroll. They should be, Union Lake should be 10 and Midnight Stroll should be 6. Horses like Freedom Speaks are hard for me to gauge because I've noticed that the public seems to overlook surface issues or surfaces. And, you know, I've spent so much time handicapping and betting on or against horses that the public is mistreating as far as what surface they're on. And, you know, to me, Freedom Speaks is a horse who has amassed these two really strong figures in her last two, but they've been on turf. And, I mean, her recent dirt start, her only dirt start for Ronnie Spatz, was not anything special. So I didn't exactly know how the public was going to approach her. She's also kind of drawn a little more favorably on the outside. So, yeah, it's a tricky one.
Let's get some thoughts about the Saturday card at Aqueduct. And we talked with Dave earlier about that Hill Prince, which is really fun.
Yeah, it is a good race. And a Unanimous Consent, who I really thought would run better in the Virginia Derby last time out, will look to rebound. He was a little underwhelming in the Pennine Ridge, two back. Now second off the layoff, if he runs back to that Woodhaven, he could be very dangerous. It's one of two Chad Browns in there with McKinnon, who is new to Chad's care, has been out west with Doug O'Neill, and really didn't get better as a three-year-old. He kind of, you know, he ran third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, which was not a particularly good race. In retrospect, saved the winner. And he just didn't go on much. After that dirt race, he kind of ran the same race three times in a row. We'll see if it ends up being good enough. The barn switch for Wicked Fast to Mike Maker, I think, is probably a little interesting. This is a horse who's run races that are fast enough. He's going to have to run better. But I thought that he might be worthy of a little bit of inclusion at a price. The situation right now at Aqueduct that I have to alert everybody to is that, and I feel like I'm a broken record with this, but they took the rail down on the inner turf course, and the inside was just, it was ridiculous yesterday. I mean, go watch the 9th race if you weren't paying attention to Royal Aqueduct, and the winner just sat on the rail the entire way, and everybody on the outside that looked like they were making a winning move spun their wheels, and this horse just burst through on the inside. It happened a couple of times on the inner turf, so I guess with that said, how can we take advantage of it? You know, you want to upgrade speed. Obviously, there is not very much speed in this race, and that's a concern. So I wonder, in a way, if you're going to see a horse on the inside, even potentially like Celestial City, get a little bit more forwardly placed. Lascano's usually hip to these scenarios, and if he ends up towards the lead, I think he could be very dangerous. One thing I would say is that whoever does get towards the front is going to end up being a little tough to handle because there's an edge to being forwardly placed and on the rail.
Interesting. All right, I'm glad you pointed it out for those that didn't tune in yesterday. Any other spots tomorrow that jumped out at you?
Yeah, I mean, and by all means, it could mitigate a little bit by tomorrow. We'll see if, you know, if a day's worth of racing on it today makes any difference. But, I don't know how much it will. There's also a little bit of a forecast for rain tomorrow, and I think a little bit more on Sunday. No, I mean, it's a decent enough card. Somehow there's a great stake for female horses going long on the turf that does not have a Chad Brown entrant in it, which is pretty surprising. That's a Noble Damsel, which goes as the third, and really not a very interesting betting race, but not a bad card, and certainly good for this time of year.
Nick, I appreciate it, and when we talk next week, we'll be poised. We'll have pre-entries, and we can do some of our early forecasting based on the work you'll have already put in those 48 hours.
Looking forward to it, my friend.
I appreciate it. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam, 1215. Going to close out the morning. Got 15 minutes to spend. Perfect with Eric Hamelbeck. Eric the Tiger, and I don't know if you saw that I took that picture that Alex Barkoff had of the fairgrounds, and I retweeted it, and I said, in Louisiana style, I said, let's go, G-E-A-U-X, and certainly that's something that that Eric Hamelbeck can appreciate. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you, brother?
I'm great. I thought there were two reasons to reach out to you and close out the morning. For starters, I've seen a couple times this week a reminder to horsemen that they've got to get their claiming crown horses essentially, pre-entered or at least put their hat in the ring. What do they have to do? And they got to do it by tomorrow, right?
Absolutely. Now, that's the deadline, and I appreciate you allowing us to get on air and push this out here one more time. But I will let everyone know, thanks to Ben Huffman and Dan Bork at Churchill, there is a late nomination fee to request eligibility. But by the $200 eligibility request, it is the 22nd. And I'll tell you, just from a conversation with Dan and Ben and Jenny Reese, who obviously helps do everything under the sun for us and the Kentucky HPPA, that the nominations are rolling in. So the word's getting out there. Somewhat simple. You can go to the website and download the eligibility request form. In fairness, if you're running out of time, you can email me and I'll get the information over to Dan in particular at the end of the day. If you have a horseman's account set up at Churchill and the money's in there, then you're good to go. So we're really excited to have it at Churchill this year. And I think your point earlier on the show about the proximity and the logistics is spot on. I think that having it there this year is going to really benefit being in a location that is certainly able and easy to ship to.
Well, and that part of it, I mean, for people that had essentially not even considered the claiming crown in the last several years, not that it wasn't great to have it at Gulfstream, but it's such an extreme geographic ship that it just, becomes prohibitive. So people in the Southwest, people in the upper Midwest, et cetera, they all can reach Churchill within 24 hours. I mean, it's so much easier. East Coast as well. It's a nothing trip. Mm-hmm. So this makes a lot of sense. And, of course, we should mention, too, since Fairgrounds came up today, the next year's Claiming Crown will come back to Fairgrounds. Hasn't been there. And when was the last time it was there?
Oh, gosh. You put me on the spot there. But it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Well before I was around. And, again, it's just a great, great partnership with the horsemen in Kentucky and Louisiana, and then obviously having Mike Ziegler in the mix with CDI and the racetrack organization. It's glad that they appreciate this event and want to host it and keep it within that family. So right now that's the plan. We'll be finalizing that, of course, after this meet. After November 12th when we have the races, but yeah, that's the plan.
Well, and I also want to mention, so we should give everybody the specifics too, for those that, you know, never consider this, in terms of eligibility. And there's 8 races that are going to make up the card, the Kent Sterling Memorial, the Iron Horse, the old name, or still is attached, the Rocket, mm-hmm. Reddy's Rocket Express, the Glass Slipper, the Rapid Transit, the Tom Metzen Memorial, Canterbury, the Tierra, the Emerald, and the Jewel. And the claiming levels ratchet up in you know, as the afternoon goes on. You know, the first 2 races, one long, one short on the dirt, the Sterling and the Reddy's Rocket, $8,000 horse has to have run for $8,000 or less. The Glass Slipper, 12.5, that's a mile on the dirt. The Rapid Transit, 7 furlongs. By the way, Glass Slipper fillies and mares. Rapid Transit, 7 furlongs on the dirt. 16,000 is the claiming level, and then 25,000. The Metzen, the Tierra, and the Emerald, and those are respectively 3 turf races. There's the Turf Sprint, which is the Metzen, $25,000 claiming level. The Tierra, 8.5 for the fillies and mares, and the Emerald for the boys, 8.5 on the turf. And then the Jewel, $35,000 is the claiming level, and they're going to go 1 1/8 miles on the dirt. How are things? What are you hearing from Churchill on the turf? Everything shaping up all right?
Absolutely, and rightfully so. We get a lot of questions, a lot of calls, and I really appreciate horsemen really from all over the country right now. Got a call on Sunday from Canada, you know, people just wanting to be sure that the turf is set and ready to go. I've been having phone conversations really since August with Mike Ziegler, Ben Huffman, just making sure that they're confident. And right now, all signs are pointing to everything will be fine for November 12th. They've been certainly monitoring the situation. Obviously, they are... let's say it this way, there'll be another track expert come in, Ben told me next week, just evaluating the progress, but they have had no inclination that things are going backwards, so they feel very confident by the 12th of November we'll be ready for those 3 races on the turf.
Everything, any horseman, anything you need to know is at claimingcrown.com. There's the forms to print out and essentially nominate. $200 to nominate. The purses in these races start at $100,000. And they tick it up to 125 and 150, and then the classic, the Jewel, is 175. This was such a great concept, and it continues.
Well, and Steve, I want to make sure too that a lot of horsemen out there are familiar with the Claiming Crown, and I want to make sure that they understand not only with the help of the KTDF fund, we've got some plus money if you're a Kentucky bred, if you get into those races. So we're extremely appreciative for that add-on.
Nice.
But in addition to that, there are no entry and starter fees. So that's been taken away, thanks to, again, to the Kentucky HBPA for their support on the purses. There is no starter or no entry fees. You're just making your horse eligible, and that's essentially administration fee that we're having to go through. But ultimately, this is a great thing for the races themselves, and we want to make sure that gets highlighted. And certainly the thank you goes to the support of the purse structure from the Kentucky HBPA being able to put up that money without any additional supplementation.
Well, it looks like $120,000 in supplemental money from KTDF, and that's really nice. And of course, the fact that you don't have to reach in your pocket again to pass the entry box—that's very cool. Nicely done.
Yeah, and I also want to thank again Churchill Downs Management. You know, they don't historically have races that are named for, you know, outside of folks in the Churchill management, Churchill family, obviously. But again, understanding the importance of Tom Metzen, who I would certainly put up there as one of the founders of the event. And then also Kent Sterling, my mentor for a long time, Florida HBPA, but again, allowing us to keep those names. But then also on Ben's suggestion, bringing in one of the best sprinters around from the Churchill aspect and Reddy's Rocket. And Tim Glashow was, I think, over the moon appreciative of that. So naming that race after such a great sprinter is you know, just another benefit and appreciation for the event overall.
Very nice. Well, and other contributing founders, Nat West, right?
Nat,
a lot of this is the brainchild of Nat. Brilliant publicist. Eric, let's shift gears. A reminder again, claiming crown tomorrow. Get your horse nominated. If you need any help, you can write an email to Eric, E. Hamelback. If you don't know how to spell Eric's name, E-H-A-M-E-L-Back, B-A-C-K, at hppa.org, or call Eric, et cetera, or call Ben Huffman and tell him you're nominating and text, whatever you want to do. Get nominated.
That's right.
It's going to be great. November 12th is the date, right after Breeders' Cup, the claiming crown. Eric, we got about 4 or 5 minutes, which for now seems like enough, because there's a lot of dust that's going to have to settle after this week's news from HISA. Your impression of the budget suggestion that they floated this week, $72 million.
Right, so the $72,509,662, it could be a quick conversation and that I just smile and say, I told you so. You know, we've been asking for dollar figures so that the industry could determine how it was going to be paid for. You know, again, setting lawsuits and everything else aside, no one has ever, fought against uniformity. And, you know, that's something all of us want. But the reality is, how is it going to be paid for? And you know, we've been saying that, I give Dr. Richardson, again, a mentor of mine, was probably at a TOBA trustees meeting, the first person, and I was sitting next to him, and said, you know, to the presenters of the original bill, how's it going to be paid for? So really, since 2015, I've been asking the question along with many other folks. So we've got the monies, right? We've got somewhat of a breakdown per se of what's going to go where, but I would still classify a lot of it as just non-transparent. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to bring more information out there, but what was put out in the press from their press release, again, not exactly what the state racing commissions are also seeing. But, you know, there's breakdowns by state, there's breakdowns by racetracks, and a lot of the racetracks have already received this information. And my phone has pretty much been nonstop since Monday evening with concerns of, you know, the air quotes, how are we expected to pay for this, you know, this figure? And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how things shake out. Obviously, there are some aspects that a dollar figure that's given to a state or a racetrack can be amended down if you allow the corporation that is under HISA to commandeer your employees. So there, I use the word credits could be given if you fall in line. But at the end of the day, when you look at the states that did agree or voluntarily agreed, there were only, I believe, five. Again, you've got California, Colorado, Minnesota, Kentucky, and Virginia, I think, were the only ones that really volunteered from a state standpoint that they would help in the first place. So now, what are you going to do with this new, much larger allocation? I think there's a lot of questions that have not been answered, and there's a lot of discussion that's going to need to occur before any of the figures that have already been floated out there are finalized. But again, at the end of the day, please keep in mind these people that are seeing these astronomical figures, don't forget to factor in that there are states that are already paying, or all of the racing jurisdictions are already paying something. Now it's HISA's responsibility. And if we lose the states having an assistance with the funding, that's what's going to be detrimental. And again, I think Ed Martin and the ARCI pointed that out yesterday. And I give him credit for trying very hard to work with HISA, as this was, you know, being set out and put forth. And they being the corporation that is under HISA, didn't take heed, or at least it didn't seem to take any of the advice that the states were trying to give them. And, you know, something as simple as, you know, there's a deadline of a, you know, let's say mid-November. There are plenty of racing commissions that have already met, and they won't be meeting until after
right. That
deadline.
Exactly.
So, you know, just the logistics just continue to, you know,
confound.
Yeah, exactly. They who are putting this together, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to label them too generically, but they're just not paying attention to what is the real world. And they're not talking to the folks that do this on a day-to-day basis. You know, I do applaud some of the, you know, the players that are now on this committee. Obviously, I think there are some, you know, they all are, I'm sure. But the ones that I know personally are, you know, they are right in line with what we would want. But as I said from the beginning, we needed these people in line
at the beginning
in January
of
2021.
Exactly. Eric, I got to pull up to wrap, but
yep.
I wanted just a, you know, gut reaction. We'll have Ed Martin will join us next week, and that'll lay out what the difficulties are for the state commissions involved in this. Eric, thank you. Claiming crown,
thank
everybody.
You,
get it in tomorrow. Thanks to Eric and earlier Hammer, of course, and Nick Tamaro, Scully and Shapiro, Dave Grenig and Marty McGee, and Callie Francois at Maryland for the Maryland Million. Have a great weekend, everybody. Back with you Monday, pre-entry day for the Breeders' Cup. Good luck. Gus has got some Keeneland for you today, and I'm not sure what I'm going to put up in terms of plays for tomorrow. Talk to you Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.